Yeah. The topics that we've been covering, so as I said, security is one of quality features of a database system. Indexing has to do with performance, which is also a quality parameter. And what we'll talk about now is robustness and consistency, which is also a quality parameter. So it's not so much into the programming, but it's more into how the database system deals with it. And the reason why I would like you to understand and know this is so that you understand that even though a database is stored in files, these files aren't like any other files. So if you would like to backup, for instance, a database, it's not just take backup of the files. It's much more complex, and I hope that you understand that better after this part where we talk about the log file and how the... And how the database management system makes sure that it preserves the consistency and the quality of the data. So this goes a little bit into DevOps. You've probably heard DevOps. So development, quality assurance, operations. We have a common shared interest in developing systems that work well, are secure, perform well, are robust, and it's not just the operations department or the quality assurance department, it's also us as developers. So knowing this helps us as developers as well. Some of you will be more into the operations as well. But knowing this, even for the developers, is necessary. So this was for some years ago. Now I think Telenor have had problems, and Vips isn't working, and Telenor isn't working. And in this case, I don't know if you can read it, but it said that it was a large part of the customer database was deleted by a mistake. I guess somebody got fired after that. So sometimes we do stupid things. So, okay, like drop database. Oh, wow, it disappeared. Yeah, and drop database, there is no means of getting it back again unless you have a backup. But then, as we talk about, we'll show you now, getting a database back up again from backup is not just putting up some files and everything is fine. So they were fined, actually, quite a lot for that incident. And there has been more things like this. So knowing and understanding and respecting the complexity of systems and knowing what tools we have to protect ourselves is good. How many of you have heard about transactions before? A little bit. Deepti is going to talk much more about transactions on Tuesday when we talk about concurrency, because then transaction is the unit of interest there as well. But for logging and for recovery, we also need to understand and to deal with transactions, because transaction is a series of actions. So let's say if I am to transfer money from my savings account to my ordinary account, then I will first deduct money from one account and add it to the other. I don't want something to happen in the middle there, because then all of a sudden I lose money. Then I would rather like to insert into my spendings account first and then deduct it, because then at least I got money that didn't exist, but okay, I got money. So this is we would like this to be a logical unit of work. We would like it to be completely done or not at all, because if it's not done, we can do it later. If it's completely done, then we know that we were done with it. So let's say you have a you have a company with 250 employees, and you're going to give each one a 1.2% raise, salary raise, and you start, and midway it crashes, and you don't know who got the raise, who didn't get the raise. So you want all of them to get the raise, or none of them, because if none of them got the raise because of a problem, you can redo it again. So this is really about protecting operations that logically should be done as a unit. And you could then see the application program as a series of transactions. And there are other operations in between there that you format something, you generate some graphics and all that. But in general, you have transactions that would update the database from one state to the other. What you saw in the first assignment was a very simple database. It wasn't much complex. So you could just insert it. And in these programs, you could say that each update is its own transaction because it's just modifying one field. Now, if you make it more complex and you update something here and something there at the same time, remember that in relational databases, they are normalized. So typically, data is stored in different tables. And if we would like to update, and we update on several tables, we need to protect them with the transaction. I'll show you, not today, but I promised Dipti that I'll make a very short video recording just showing in PHP how you can protect a series of operations in a transaction. It's just a couple of statements. The basic understanding here is the basic terminology is consistency. So the database, we would like database data to be consistent. So right now, what's in the bank or what's in your system about salaries is consistent. This is what people do get, the salaries they do get, or this is the amount of money I do have. And the purpose of a database is to transform that state into a new persistent state. So if I pay a bill or if I transfer money, then I will. It's going from consistent when I haven't paid or haven't transferred money into next consistent state, which is I have paid or I have transferred money. So these are the consistent states. In between, we don't want the database in that in between state to be visible or to be the one that is kept in any way because it's a transition state. You know that we can't update multiple things at the same time, so we need to do them in order. And things may happen in that sequence. And that's why we have these mechanisms. So if something happens, we are able to get the database back to a consistent state, not where money all of a sudden has been deducted from one account, not inserted in another one, or only half of the company got the raise, not the other half. Is this too small? No. So here, this is really... we need to be down here. So here we have the recovery manager. The recovery manager is the one we're going to talk about now. The recovery manager is, if something happens, it's going to try to recover the database from whatever it has. And it works very closely with the buffer manager. So we're going to talk a little bit about the buffering, and I'll show an example how these interact. And then the recovery manager is dealing with this log file. That's where it's keeping operations, log the operations, so you can recover after a failure. So I don't know if you have thought about that, but when you in your program write to a file, it's no guarantee that the actual file is written to the disk immediately, and definitely not in the database system. So when we hear, we have the query program code, we go through the authentication, we insert data, okay, data is in a transaction, data is being scheduled, it's being going through the recovery managers, we want to update some fields, and then it's here in the buffer. Because if the database had to write to the disk every time there's an operation, it would be slowing down. You would have to constantly wait for a disk to be done. So because of that, it's trying to intelligently manage the disk. So it will delay some updates until it's a good time versus what everything else is doing. So updates may here exist only in the buffer, not on the actual disk. So things that the database you have written to the database or inserted in the database may not physically be on the disk yet. It will end up there because that's a persistent store. And the database wants to keep data persistent. So when you turn off the power, next time you turn it on, data is there. But it may not be there all the time. It may be that it just exists in memory in the buffer. To optimize the utilization and to optimize performance. We want that. But then we also want the system to make sure that if things happen, if power goes off, if the disk crashes, we would like to be able to recover data. We will be able to get back what we had before the crash. But that's a big challenge. That's the number one challenge for a database operation, is to make sure that the data is kept consistent and available, that we don't lose data. So the database recovery is about restoring data to a consistent state after a failure. And there are a number of reasons why we need that. Because if you turn off the power, then anything that's stored in memory will be lost. If you have a disk crash or if you have flooding, then even data on your disk will be lost. And in a good database, in a storage facility where you have databases, we need to think about these things. We need to make sure that power failure is not causing any problems to our data, and that physical problems is not causing data either. So you probably heard about RAID disks, where you have arrays of disks, so you can so if one is failing, then the other ones are working. So all these things are there to minimize the problem with volatile storage. And then you have backup regimes and backup on other places to avoid that physical media get deleted and destroyed. So we really would like to be in stable storage. And it's not considered stable if you have it one place only. We need to have it in two places. I hope all of you have a good regime for backup using cloud services, or using somebody's service that is backing up. I need to tell you the story about the master's student I had once. He was writing his thesis. He had a disk crash, but he was quite happy because he had been making backups on CD every week in the spring. So he had a stack of CDs. He put in the first CD, it wasn't readable. He put in the second CD, it wasn't readable. So he obviously had a problem with the CD writer. So none of his CDs were readable. So he lost everything, even with backups. So be careful about your backups. But only when we have data stored in multiple places or on multiple media that have what is called independent failure modes. So if one of them, if you keep your backup disk at home, then if you have a fire, okay, sorry, there you went the backup. So think about independent failure modes. So then you have to think about what are the failure modes and try to make sure that, okay, so if you store it in the cloud and store it on a computer, you should be okay because the cloud servers, they store it many places as well. Okay, what failures? Have you experienced any failures, physical failures? And you had these crashes? These crashes. So, and the fires can happen. But you also have human errors, human failures, like the Telenor case. So it might be software having a problem or sabotage. So there are many reasons why. So I think we were. Talked a little bit with Eric and information security, and you know these schemes where you have these viruses locking down, encrypting, locking down all your files. The best way to deal with that is basically to have a backup that have files before they were encrypted. So, recovery. We are back to the transaction. So the transaction is the unit of recovery. So what we'll do with the recovery is to make sure that a transaction is completely restored or completely erased. So if something happens in the middle of a transaction, then we have to erase it. If something happens to something that was already committed, then we need to restore it. So you basically need to erase or restore, or undo or redo, that are the terms we use here. So, because if we have failure before data is being flushed. Let's say we have a transaction. Transaction is completed, and then we would like it to be persistently stored. But it's just in memory yet. It's not stored on disk. And if power goes, then we lost it. But we need to restore it. It needs to be put back because the user has got the confirmation that money was transferred. So that's the state we need to restore. And we call that a redo or roll forward. And the other is if we at the time of failure had already been writing some data to disk that shouldn't be there, or for a transaction that wasn't complete, that data shouldn't be there. So we need to erase that or undo, roll back the changes. So we need to know the transactions. Was the transaction complete or not? And based on whether the transaction was complete or not, we need to figure out if it was incomplete, then we need to undo everything it did. If it was complete, we need to make sure that the last persistent state is what's on in the database. And in the database, if we talk about the database system, now in the database may basically means in the buffer, or if the buffer is empty on the database file. Because it's not enough that it's on the file. It what matters is what's on the buffers, because that's what the user will see. And if it's not in the buffer, then the buffer manager will read data from the file. So it needs to be there as well. So this is the example. That's did anyone look at this in the textbook? Okay, then we can spend a bit of time going through it. So what we show here are six different transactions, T1 to T6. And the starting point, T1 started here, and is long-lasting transaction going all the way through the time of failure to the crash. We have a T2 that started here and was done here, that meaning that it was committed and done. T3 starting, stopping, T4. T5 and T6 was also started, but it wasn't done by the time of the crash. So here at TF, at the time of failure, we have to decide what to do with these files, because there are some transactions that should be restored if they are lost. Well, those are? Which of these transactions should be restored after a crash? Then the database starts up, and then it will recover data and get it back in a persistent state before it lets any users get into the system. And what do we need to make sure? Which of these transactions do you need to restore? Do you need to make sure that whatever changes they made should be back in the database? Is that a trick question? This one got the confirmation that you are done. Okay, we have your data. Then we need to make sure that when the system comes back up, that whatever data they got the confirmation. So if I transfer 1 million Norwegian kroner, then when I get back after a failure, I would like to see that that money was transferred, because I got a receipt that it was transferred. Same here. If I got 10 million from somebody else at the same time, and I got the confirmation, and when the database comes up, it better show me that 10 million are there. So those that were successfully ending before the failure, they need to be restored. Before the database gets up and running, they need to be in the database. But T1 and T6, they weren't completed. So whatever changes they did, we need to erase them. We need to undo the changes they did, because they were not complete. So that's not a consistent state. They were in the middle of doing something. So whatever they did, we need to undo it. So whatever is here, we need to make sure it's in the database, and whatever's still running, we need to make sure that we undo and put the database back to the state it was before they started, these processes started. You follow me on that? Now, There is a dotted line here. TC. And the C is for checkpoint. So the database system will often have checkpoints. A checkpoint is a point where the database decides now it's time to write all the buffers to disk. So at this point, whatever changes T1 has done is written to disk. The final state of T2 is written to disk. Final state of T3 is written to disk. Whatever T4 has been able to do up to now is written to disk. And that's it. Then we know that at this point, they were written to disk. Which means that when we try to sort things out, we know that T2 and T3, we don't have to worry about them. Because they were at the time of crash, they were successfully written to disk. So we know that they are on the disk. You follow me on that? But these two, they were still running, so they were not completed. So whatever changes here, we may not know if they are on the disk. So these ones need to be redone. They need to be recovered, redone, put back in the database. And as I said before, T1 and T6, they are unaffected by the checkpoint. Only thing is that we know for sure that T1 generated something here on the disk that we need to erase. It stored something that is not correct. You follow me on this one? So let's then look at what is the data the database use to handle this. And the log file is the basic. There are different formats for log file, but this is a quite general one and quite a useful one. So in the log file, whenever an operation is requested from the database, the recovery manager writes to the log file. And the log file obviously needs to be stored in a place and flushed out, so we need to make sure that the log file is there. So if things happen, the log file cannot be lost. We need that one. The file can crash, the disk can crash, but the log file, we need that one to be able to recover. So if you look at what's here on the log file, so we have a transaction ID, which tells us what transaction is requests an operation, and then the time stamp for the operation, what operation was requested. Starting a transaction, updating something, inserting something, deleting something, committing something, checkpointing. These are the events that are being logged. So whenever there is something in the something being requested or the database decides to do something, it's logged here. So we know what happens. And it's important that the log is written before the operation is executed. Because if the operation was executed, but the log entry wasn't written, then we have a mismatch. So we have to make sure that log is written first. And it doesn't matter if the operation wasn't done, because as you can see here, whenever we make a change, we tell what record was changed or what field was changed. And we have a before and after image. What does that mean? We know the old value, what it was before it was changed, and the value it was after it was changed. Because then we know what it should have been, either if it was to be redone, then we need to put in the new value. If it needs to be undone, we need to put back the old value. Now we have both. So we can do undo and redo on every operation. And of course, if we insert something, it doesn't have an old value because it was inserted here and there. And if it was deleted, it doesn't have a new value because it was deleted. Is this pretty clear? So what we do is that we log everything. We need to know who requested the operation. We need to know what the operation. And we need to know what was data before and after the operation, whenever is an operation there. So that's the easy. That's straightforward. Now, in addition, we have two columns here with P and N pointers. These are previous sibling and next sibling. So these are pointers within the log file. So if you see here, the start T1 start had nothing before itself, but it has number two is something that is the next pointer. That is where T2 starts. And T2 has no previous, and T3. So these are for the individual operations for each transaction. So we have what is the next operation in that transaction. So here, next pointer for the start is 2, which is update. Next pointer is 8. If you go to line 8, we find that T1 is committing. So you see, this is the pointer from one operation to the other inside a transaction, forwards and backwards, which is useful for us for when we do undo and redo, because undo and redo, we undo and redo one transaction. And then it's convenient for us to follow operations. Now, why do we have both previous pointers and next pointers? Exactly. So for redo, you use next pointers, because redo, you would like to end up with the latest value. Think about if you change the same value twice, then one of the updates is going to override the other. So if you want to redo, you want to make sure that the latest is the one that is there. So you follow the next pointers. If you like to undo, you would like the oldest value to be there. So you need to go in reverse order. You need to follow the back pointers. That's exactly right. So, are we happy with this one? So basically, we have the transactions, we have the operations, we have what they did, and we have pointers, so we can follow each transaction backwards and forwards inside this structure. In addition, we may have checkpoints, and at the checkpoint time, we tell the system which transactions were active at the time. Because we know that here, at the time, T1 was not active anymore. So we know that at this checkpoint time, whatever T1 is done, we don't have to worry about it. So we don't. When we go through the file, we don't have to worry about T1, because T1 was not active here. It was done, which means that the changes were stored in the checkpoint. You follow me on that? Because otherwise, I would basically have to scan through backwards through the whole file. But now I'm just going to scan and know that, okay, I need to undo those who are still active at this point. Those two need to be, I need to complete those two, but the other ones weren't active, so I don't have to worry about them. Because at checkpoint time, whatever consistent state they were in is written to the disk as well. A lot of logic on one small file, isn't it? I think basically, if you remember that you have per transaction, you have all the operations, what they were, what data was before, what data was set to, and we know what transactions did what, so we can do both undo and redo, then that's basically the important part of this file. So now this is... what happened to my... This is what I was thinking to do as an exercise. And that one I hear. So let's just go through, because I think that gives you a little bit of it gives you a little bit of understanding how these various data interact. So I don't show you the, or this is the log file. And so let's say we start here. And in the log file, it says, first we started, okay? And then we update SL21. So we'll just set them to be a new value. Okay, then next is T2 starts, T2 inserts, SG37. So that should be inserted. SG37, and we have the new value here. Then T2 deletes SA9. So this one is deleted. It's common to put a, sorry, it's quite common to put a deleted flag. So let me just mark it as deleted this way. Then we update PG16, gets a new value. Then T3 starts, T1 commits. What's happening when T1 commits? We don't know. The buffer may not be written to disk. We don't know that. But we know that the consistent state has changed. So I have a consistent state on the side here. So what I know now is since 21 was, because if you look at T1, what did it do? It updated 21, commit. It means that the consistent state of the database should be this. This is the consistent state. So this is what we would like to rebuild after. The buffers need to be back here into this state after recovery. But we don't know. But then, after this, comes the checkpoint. The checkpoint says that now we should write everything to disk. That means that SL gets the new value. We created the SG37. I messed up this one, I shouldn't update this one, or this one we deleted, I was a bit off, that's in buffer, sorry for that, because this one needs to be deleted, and PG16 gets a new value. And now you see what's in the buffer is aligned with what's in the database, but they are not aligned with the consistent state because there are transactions going on. T2 and T3, their operations are on the disk and in the buffer, but they are not consistent because the transactions haven't committed yet. Is that okay? Then comes commit on T2. T2 updated SG37. Or inserted SG37, so we need to do SG37 here, is a new one. And now it deleted this one, so now is the time to delete this one. And it changed this property. Commit. But if things crashes now, then this is what's in the database file. But this is what we should have. Because this one, when it crashes, this one goes. But this is what we should have. And then we insert property PG4 or P3 does. PG4 is a new value. But PG4 is not part of consistent state. And until commit. PG4. New. Now, if the disk crashes now, the buffer is gone. This is what it should be rebuilt to. So what we need to do is to go to this database file, and the database file is mostly correct. What is lacking is that we need to redo T3, because the T3 happened after last checkpoint. So it's not reflected in the disk yet. If it had crashed up here, then we might have to undo as well. Then we might, because on this checkpoint, if we went back a little bit to this checkpoint, sorry, since if we had no commit before the checkpoint, then there will be data that had been changed that was not committed and that we should undo. Is that giving you a little bit of understanding what's happening? So we have the buffer. That is kind of what is currently there. It may not be consistent, but because that's what the database currently is having. We have the file where it's not persistent either because it's whatever has been written to disk. And then we have the log file that is keeping track of everything so that if something's crashing, we are able to get back into the consistent state, which means that whatever has been committed is restored and whatever was in the way of being modified is undone. That's our job. Was this okay? Clear? Before we end this part, just going to say a little bit about physical design, because what Dipti has been through was the conceptual design, logical design, and then the relational design. But now we come to the physical design, which is adding indexes, adding or defining what database structure or database file structure, maybe normalizing data. So the one thing you have to think about when you create a database system is what type of database engine. MySQL, even MySQL, has several engines. The one we use by default is the InnoDB. MySQL started with something called MyESAM. We're not using that anymore, and there's no much reason for using it. InnoDB is so good, powerful, and that's the one they maintain or they put into as a default because that's the richest and the most stable one. But you can also have in-memory database. You can store everything just in memory. So, which of course then means that may not be a good idea for data that we want to keep persistent. But if you like a database for quick operations, and sometimes you copy data to another database that is persistent, then this could be okay. And you have an archive database, which is really doesn't support updates, just retrieval. So if you have huge amounts of data from old times, you could just store it in an archive engine. And in MySQL has a clustered version where you can have a database with many servers working together. So this is one thing in the physical design. We had to decide on what would be the engine we want to use. And based on the engine, we get different storage limits. You can see the archive has none. You can store whatever as much as you want. It doesn't care. Well, the memory one depends on how much RAM you have, of course. Whether they support transactions, whether you can lock. This is something that Dipti is going to talk about on Tuesday. Whether there is a support for B-trees. And the archive doesn't have a B-tree, so it's very slow. So it stores a lot, but doesn't have an index. It's very, very slow. Hash, you have had hashes as well through this course, so you can get a hash database that's using memory. You can see memory database is basically hashing it. It doesn't do B-trees, it's a hashing. And full text that we talked about, foreign keys. So based on these features, you could decide which database would be the right one for the purpose you have in mind. Dipti has talked a lot about normalization, and you will get a normalization problem for the exam, that's for sure. Been given every year and will be given this year as well. And normalization is good. because that's a good way to deal with complexity. It allows speed of updates to some updates, and it gives flexibility. Because you can, if you remember some of the normalization problems, is that you can't easily update certain data, or you get some anomalies. Normalization, you get rid of them. But sometimes the problem would be the query performance. So let's say you know that the if you store person's address, then the postal code and the city are functionally dependent. So it's a third normal form violation if you store both the postal code and the city. But in most databases, they will still be stored together because, I mean, they're treated as just an address. You just use it to print out a label. You're not querying the advanced things. You don't update these relationships. You don't need a lot. So sometimes you do denormalization. You introduce additional relations. You introduce things that would speed up the database querying, but with the risk of having redundant data, with the risks of having inconsistent data. But we find it can be okay if you don't update data a lot and you have very high query rates, because then you can afford the extra work on update to have much better performance in retrieval. But don't start there. This one we just do if we have a problem. So we start by having normalized data, easiest to maintain and manage, the best performance in updates, and works quite well. If you have a performance problem, then we start thinking about denormalization. Not as, okay, we'll be faster if we... Well, if you don't need that faster, it's probably not a good idea. Yes, we covered a lot of ground, many different things. What I would like you to remember would be the indexes, the fact that it actually helps retrieval time, and especially for fields that have quite unique values. So there aren't many records that have a given value. And, of course, very useful when you have foreign keys and primary keys, because you're going to match and look them up quite frequently, and you're going to be looking for integrity constraints. But indexes will slow down insertions, updates, and deletes. So we have to make sure that the querying is the retrieval is the important part, not the update. And for database administration, we worry about transactions. That's our unit of work. And we have the log file to keep track of all the changes so that we can restore data, recover database after crash, which means undo transactions that weren't completed and redo transactions that had completed before the crash, but of one reason or the other is not on the on the disk. And then there is a variety of engines you could use. And when you choose to go on with the database, do the homework. Try to understand what are the requirements and needs of the system so that you can choose the best engine. If you have a performance problem, denormalization could be the thing to do, meaning that you replicate data or you break functional dependencies to make it faster. I think that's it. Any questions from the last part? The log file, the undo, redo? It's quite well described in the textbook as well, and the chapter references is in on Blackboard, so you can read there as well. But it's I'm not so interested in the details, because I mean, if you need to work with it, you're going to understand the details if you understand the principles. The principles is we need to recover data, we need to undo things that were partly done, we need to redo things that were completely done, and And for that, we need data. We need to know what transactions did what, and we need to know what data was before and what is this after the update. Good. Then I'll chew on the feedback to see what we'll do on Thursday.